Shalom Aleichem, Chaver, it's Binyamin Hammer at the National Council of Young Israel. I'd like to welcome Revi and all the Rabbanim on the call. This is conference call number 103, our final Erev Pesach conference call. Thank you, Revi.
You're very welcome. I see there are only 11 questions. People are busy in Erev Pesach. We'll try to make it short and sweet. Question one. In general, is there an issue taking vitamins on Pesach? Can someone who has been taking a vitamin regimen this year to improve their immune system continue taking the vitamins on Pesach, even though they typically don't use vitamins on Pesach? Well, there are many svarim about this. I have a sefer called the Oleo the Trufa, an entire sefer devoted to the kashrus of medicines. And the conclusion is that, strictly speaking, is not really a kashrus problem for a variety of reasons. Perhaps it's considered ein aroir la'achila, not a food, it's not edible. Or at the very least, if it's swallowed, it is called shaloka derech achila, which he paskas mutter for a chola shein bo sakona. According to most authorities, if it's called ein aroir la'achila, we do not apply the principle of achshave, of you rendering it significant by your ingesting it. And certainly to improve your immune system is a medical need, and it's permissible to take it on Pesach. Question two. We'll be having a minyan on Tanis Bechorim. The Messiah will make the siyum for the minyan and those joining on Zoom. Our policy during the pandemic has been that there's no public eating in the building. Does the Messiah need to eat publicly? Do those who are physically present for the siyum need to eat straight away? Or can they eat when they get home? Well, let's... If it's a Zoom, so obviously the person who's on Zoom is not in shul, is in a home, he can eat wherever he is. That's not a lechatchila on Zoom, but b'diavad the post can suggest that Zoom would work. The question therefore reduces to a situation of someone who's in shul and he wants to fulfill the inyan of the siyum lechatchila. Well, the answer is very simple. If it's a shul policy, there's no food in shul whatsoever, the rav should not violate the shul policy but eating in the shul. That'll be a very, very bad lesson for the Rav to teach the Balabatim. It's good for me, not for you. What we should do in such a circumstance, which may happen in my shul, is you set up a table outside the shul, not in the shul itself. And then, after the siyum is concluded in the shul, assuming the weather permits, go outside, and people should sit or stand at social distance and lower the mask to be able to eat. You're supposed to eat. They say a kebetz's worth of mizonos to make sure that you have eaten enough to break the fast. I mean, koseves, a little more than a kebetz's worth of mizonos. And if you break the fast by doing that, some poskim say, less than that, you're not breaking the fast, tanis b'choros, then it would be enough to relieve you of the responsibility to fast. Someone who's afraid even to do that, to stand outside the shul 6 feet away and have a cookie, what you should do is take it into your car. If you have no car, take it to your house. Obviously, for safety's sake, it would be better if these cookies would all come individually wrapped. But that's a situation that will depend on every shul individually. Number three, we'll be making arrangements to authorize online for the sale of chametz similar to last year. The answer is, well, let's remember, last year there was no alternative. Last year, Erev Pesach, nobody left the house. I mean, I left the house to meet with a nochri. Usually in my shul, we have, 30, 40 rabbonim, and others come along. It was much too dangerous. I met a particular nochri in an outdoor setting with myself and only two other rabbis there to be edim, and with other very difficult conditions. Instead of using a small item to do Kabbalah's Kinyan, we used a bed sheet. He was 8 feet away from me. And instead of shaking hands, we sort of bumped hands from an eight-foot distance, which apparently was a legal form of Kinyan, at least last year when everything was impossible otherwise. This year, thank God, the situation is much better than last year at this time. So there will be an in-person meeting. However, because some people are afraid to go out, or some rabbis are afraid to go out, there will be, once again, an online form. Rabbi Josh Flug, Shalita from Boca Raton, was helping me last year, and he will continue this year. Details you can find out from him. Question 4. When should I sell the chametz to the non-Jew this year? How do I exclude from the sale the chametz which people want to use the rest of Friday and Shabbos until Sofas Manachilas chametz? Is the procedure any different if I'm selling the chametz for a pizza shop that plans to stay open for lunch and sell chametz on Friday, Erev Pesach, on closing a few hours before Pesach? Very, very good question. A matter of great dispute among the poskim. What I plan to do is I plan to sell the chametz at the regular time, effective immediately, which is Friday morning before the Sofsman, before the end of the fifth hour. When the fifth hour ends, it becomes Osir Banoi, can no longer sell it. So the end of the fifth hour, we're going to sell it, even though it's only Friday. You can eat chametz another 23 hours. Doesn't matter. It's quoted in the Ramah that the burning of the chametz we do early on Friday, if Pesach is on Sunday, because of a low plug, shouldn't get confused with other years. And later authorities have extended this to Mechiras Chametz, even though Mechiras Chametz is not official takana, as beer is. Nonetheless, it was wise to make this kind of a policy, which we keep. Now, it's an obvious problem. If you burned it, right, you sold it, you burned it, but now there's Chametz left over, most people, some people, refuse to have any chametz in their homes from that point on. Kol HaKavod. How do they have the Sudas on Shabbos? They use egg matzah. We pass that egg matzah, this was discussed last time, is something which you can wash and bench over. How much is a different story, but you can wash and bench. According to the census view of the poskim, you would have to finish the last egg matzah before the Sofas Man Achila on Shabbos morning, unless you're a Chola, Koton, or a Zaken, that can have it even on Pesach, according to Minhag HaRamah. Fine. But most homes, I believe, may decide to have some chametz, my home included. However, I believe that the proper way to do it, the most proper way to do it, is to only have challah rolls, one per person per meal, and everything else should be set aside and either thrown out before the sale or sold to the Nachri. In this manner, it's very clear when you tell the Nachri you're selling, I'm selling you everything except the few crumbs that I burned, that we tell the Nachri every year. But this year, we're adding, except for argument's sake, you have 10 crumbs and you have 10 challah rolls. If you have, you know, let's say 9 challah rolls, you have 3 people times 3 meals, whatever it may be, whatever the number happens to be. So you get small challah rolls and they can totally consume by every member who's, of the family who's around, or guests, who are around the table for those 3 meals. This is the way it's designated in advance. As a matter of fact, in my Shtar HaShoah this year, I even included a reference to the chumash, which is designated for the upcoming Sabbath meals. But that's not being sold to the Nachri. The reason why you want to designate it is because otherwise there are potential problems of Breira. If you just say, you know, whatever is left over. So what do you mean that by that? Well, you're going to eat some, and some you'll eat, and the ones things you won't eat, you'll put back in the pantry or back in the freezer, and we don't know in advance how much is going to be sold to the Nachri, how much not. So some authorities say it's a problem of Breira, of retroactive clarification. We cannot know in advance whether, you know, what's going to be left over, what's not going to be left over. Some poskim think that would render the entire sale null. That's a disaster. Now, I believe that there are many reasons why we can say that the sale is valid, even in a situation which runs the risk of borer. Number one, the Maharshal and Gittin Chafei of the opinion that as long as it's going to be in its barer, for sure, then we paskin yesh brera. Here it's going to be in its barer for sure. At that moment in time, what what is left, as opposed to the cases in the Gemara, Shnei Lugan Shani Osir LaHafrich, where maybe it might be Mafrish nothing. That's the Marshal. The Marshal disagrees, but that's number one. Number two, the Nesiva says in Simon Samach Aleph Sivkotin Gimel that whatever could be done later, even if you do it retroactively, does not run the risk of Brera. Here you could do it later if you want. We don't want to do it later for a reason I'll explain in a moment, a technical reason, but we could do it later. We could sell it later. We have the ability to sell it later. And therefore, there's no problem with Brera. If you look up the new beautiful Nesivus of Jim Matrovsky, in the bottom he says that not everyone agrees with the Nesivus. But many do agree. So that's another reason. Number three is the Chazon Ish in Demai, Simen Tezayin, Os Yud Gimel. He quotes a famous Gemara that many of you know from Hamafkids, if you learned it a long time ago. The Gemara talks about someone who is selling a cow with respect to the Kefil, effective a minute before the cow is stolen. And once again, the post can bring up the problem of Brera. So the Chazon Ish has a very, very dramatic answer. That in monetary matters, it's never a problem. Kol Tanai Shebamam and Kayim. Obviously, he knew all of Shas, and the many cases of Brera have to do with Issa V'Heter, and not with DNA Mamonis. Not everyone agrees. The Kivega and the Xolos have a different answer to his question. But you have three possible reasons why Brera would not create a problem. Nonetheless, it's much better to designate it in advance. So it's at the time of the sale, we know exactly what's being taken out of the sale. Call it a Shabbos box, if you will, or a Shabbos bag. That's what I think. And ideally, the bag should only contain the 10 challahs, because you know for a fact that it's going to be used up. And if something is not used up, well, then you have to throw it out. So you have to make it into smaller pieces and flush it down the toilet. As a matter of fact, Rav Sternberg Shalita, in his Moadim Uzmanim, and his, as well as Chuvas Van Hoggus, Chelek Hay, Simon Kufkov Beis, suggests that we should have to do that. That we should keep one kazayas out, and if we finish eating, throw it down the toilet to fulfill Tashbisu in the manner that's described in the Gemara. You can't burn it. We do burn it on Friday, but that burning is not the last kazayas. So you can be matalayam, as you throw it into the toilet, it goes down to the yam, and that he suggests that everybody should do that on Erev Pesach Chal B'Shabbos. Most people don't do it, but if you're left with something you can't finish, you do it that way. Perhaps it's even better than eating the whole thing. He says if you eat the whole thing, you should have a kavana to be mekayim the mitzvah tashbisa with the last kazayas that you're eating. An interesting idea. Based on Balamor and other poskim, but not for now. In any event, that's what I think should be done. Now, it is true that the pizza shop, it's not going to work. So some suggest to just make the Kenyan Chal on Shabbos. There are two reasons not to do that. One is Rabbi Kivega is a tshuva. It's prohibited to have a Kenyan take effect on Shabbos, even if you're totally passive. Simon Kuf Nuntes. Many disagree. Some claim even according to Rabbi Kivega, the problem is only with respect to the Kone, or in our case, the Nakri, not the Mocher. But it's not smooth. But a bigger issue, as far as I'm concerned, is what we call Kolso Kenyano, that some of the Kenyanim don't work in most cases. The reason being that, for example, in a typical case, when the Nachri does the Kenyan and then takes back the object of Kenyan, so in that circumstance, the Chalipin can no longer work, called Kolso Kenyano. And you lose Chalipin, you presumably would lose what's called Kenyan Situmtum when you shake hands. Also presumably works only immediately. You have some Kenyanim left. Kenyan Kesef works, even later on, because it creates a debt. And then once you get the karka, the lease to the guy, which is also usually done with Kesef as well as with Chalipin and Situmta, which are then compromised if it's not immediate. Once he has the karka, he's called a Bechotter. Yeah, that works even for later. Agav, to me, is a doubt, because Agav Kni Kani, and it's not clear to me if I say Agav Kni on Friday to take effect on Shabbos that it works. So that's a problem. I did see a creative solution that you could avoid the Kosa Kenyano by having the Goy give you an item of value, and you, the Rav, you hold on to it until after Shabbos. So it's not Kosa. You don't say Ahadra Sudra Lamari, more than the Dharma Memches. He didn't give it back to him. It's not so practical in many cases, and especially if there are many Rabbanim selling. So then, for those reasons, I'm not doing the Kenyan to take effect on Shabbos. As far as the Pita Shabbos is concerned, so we have to tell the Nochi, listen, there are individuals who are using your chametz that you own with your permission. They're going to sell it to any customers that walk into the door for the next number of hours. And after Pesach is over, there'll be a reckoning. Many situations we talk about a reckoning. How much is owed? How much is there? And if it comes to it, we'll make that reckoning. In most cases, the Nochi sells it back, and therefore the reckoning becomes unnecessary. So therefore, to summarize, I'm starting to take effect immediately. The Pizza Shop will also take effect immediately. And we will tell the Nochi that the shopkeeper is selling his chametz, and hopefully he agrees. There was a push to make another sale just before Shabbos. I'm too concerned that something might go wrong at the last minute, and I don't believe that's the right solution. Question number 5. The Mishnah Berurah in 443:8 says, we should be machmer for the Mogen Avraham time for eating chametz. However, most of the shuls in my area are using the gross time. What should I do for my shul? That's an interesting question. I took out the beautiful Passover edition of OU, and I have to take New York for an example. They tell you that the last time for eating depends. Last time to eat chametz on Shabbos morning, it says it's 10:56, according to the opinion of the Vilna Gaon, and 10:32, according to the opinion of the Magen Avraham. That's a big difference. That's 24 precious minutes. Especially if you want to get in two meals, which we spoke about last time, which is advised by the many poskim, you have to get up early, and it's a 24-minute difference. That's a big difference. In my chart, it's worse. I have 10:23 for the Magen Avraham, which is maybe should be 10:32, but about 10 minutes earlier. It's based upon my understanding that the Magen Avraham Zman is really based upon a 90-minute shear of Alos HaShachar before sunrise, not 72. I saw Rabbi Shlomo Zalman also held that shita. So in any event, it makes a big difference. Nonetheless, I tell people to follow the Magen Avraham, because that's what the Mishnah Berurah writes. That's the question they raised. Obviously, once someone wants to learn the Gra, most of us will learn the Gra for Din Daraisa, Kriyash Mashal Shachris, how much more so for this Din Darabonim? Because not eating chametz after the 4th hour is a Din Darabonim, obviously. Chatzos is the cutoff point, called the most Rishonim, for the Daraisa. That's how it is. The minig is to be makwan in Hilchos Chametz. It's just a reality. That's what I recommend. The fact that other Rabbonim are following the Gra, you have to say to the other rabbis have every right to follow the Gra. We don't take that away from them. But this rabbi was asking me, I say, you think it's better to follow the Magen Avraham. You're not talking to Balabatim, they can't follow the Gra. We can't say that. It's better to follow the Magen Avraham. It's customary because of the Chumah Zuchamitz. Question 6. Last year with the lockdown and uncertainty about the spread of COVID, I was not concerned about the sanitizers we're using, BH. This year we are in a better situation. I noticed that many sanitizers, sprays, gels, and ethanol do not say the source of their denatured. We assume that Nisra Mechilas Kelev and Mutter, should we be kosher not to use them? What would be the rule of thumb? Again, strictly speaking, it's permissible. It's Ein Aroah LeKelev. And someone who wants to be Machmir can be Machmir, but I don't believe that the rabbi should impose any Chumrah. Question 7, something similar. Should we Machmir to use only 18-minute regular machine masa? Or is any with a good hashkacha acceptable? Any with a good hashkacha is acceptable. Someone wants to be a machmer on his own, but they call 18-minute matzahs? Fine. Question 8. A congregant purchases a pharmacy in a rough, non-Jewish neighborhood and keeps it closed on Shabbos and Yom Tov. He told me that aside from medicine, the only other chametz is inshur, and other types of medical chametz one swallows and ingests. But he doesn't sell snacks and other types of items one would find in some pharmacies. Does he merely fill out a form power of attorney like everyone else? Or is there something additional regarding any potential hanah profits he would make? It seems to me there's no chametz here. There's no chametz. She doesn't use the regular form. I don't see any chametz at all. The medicines beaker are then not chametz. Ensure, what I was able to see online, is not real chametz either. And the ingredients have kidneys, but not real chametz. So in this particular case, I don't see a problem. There may be stores which are open on Pesach, which have chametz. That's a problem. So what we do in those situations, we'll call it not lechatchila mechira, where the business as such is sold to the nachri, and the store owner, who unfortunately is a non-observant person, who is keeping the store open on Pesach straight through and buying and selling to whoever walks into the door. So we the way we construct it is we tell the nachri that he, the nachri, is the owner of this store, and comes in, goes out, it's all his profits, all his losses, as the case may be. And this nachri will employ the company and the Jewish owner of the company to buy and sell on his behalf. That's the best we can do in that Shasat Chak kind of a situation. But this pharmacy itself sounds like it's okay. 9. Someone wants to make a digital platform to receive sale of Chometz power of attorney's forms. The Kenyan would come in to effect by pressing submit on his computer. They asked if someone would prefer to make a Kenyan with the Rav. Can they make the Kenyan suda while submitting the form digitally? Are you not filling it out and handing it to the Rav at the time of the Kenyan suda? The platform designer feels that all the Harshos will be more organized if they go through the digital platform. The short answer is yes. The Kenyan suda is a very strong custom. It's not required. The Rambam writes about the suda to appoint an agent. It's not a requirement, and the Ein Lezeh Tam has no real reason for it. It's done to strengthen the seriousness of the appointment of the Rav. And that's why we try to do whenever we can. That can certainly be done, and the form can be given, sent over digitally. Last year, for example, we had no alternative. There were almost no paper forms. It was all the digital forms were simply emailed to the Nachri. He received it all in his email account, and that was good enough. Yes, it's true. The Shtar Mechir was an old-fashioned paper, pen and paper. It was typed. Filled it out at the last minute with a sign my name with a regular pen, and that yes, but the harshos can be sent to the Rav digitally, and he can even send it to the Nachri if that's what's necessary. But yes, the Kenyan suda would be better. Last year we couldn't do it. This year we can. 10. The shul where I'm just starting as a rabbi has an office staff of one Jewish woman. She is there daily. There are surveillance cameras in all corners of the building, including her office. The shul president is known to monitor the surveillance cameras regularly. The rabbi's office is adjacent to the administrator's office with its own doors. And as rabbi, I would be going in and out, but not spending the 20 hours a week at my office desk in shul. That's what that means. She was insulted that the previous rabbi only came to the office along with a child. She's not observant. Any guidance would be appreciated. Kol hakavod to the previous rabbi. He didn't want any shalos of yichus. He took a child with him. So I think the present rabbi should malam hakodesh v'loma reedin, should follow the example of the previous rabbi. If it's impossible, for whatever reason, covered abrius, or the president insists, etc., it seems to me that there's room to rely upon the camera, because the camera will assure that the rabbi never walks into the office of the secretary at all, because it's all on a surveillance camera. Meek within its mutter. But the rabbi should use his judgment to know whether to rely upon that or not. 11. About 8 years ago, I was diagnosed with sleep apnea and sleep with a CPAP machine during the week. On Shabbos and Yom Tov, I turn the machine on before candle lighting. It stays on until mostly Shabbos, Yom Tov, whether I use it or not. Today, I'm being offered a new machine called APAP. It's a smart machine. It's activated when you place the mask over your face. It goes off when you remove the mask. Can I use such a machine on Shabbos and Yom Tov? Well, if the CPAP machine is just as good as the APAP machine, I would say you should stick with the CPAP machine, even though it's going to cost you a few more pennies in electricity, we don't make changes just for to save a few little bit of money for the APAP rather than the CPAP. However, if there is a medical advantage to this new machine called APAP, it seems to me a medical advantage is a tzorech refuah. A tzorech refuah is mutter b'shinui for chol l'shem b'sakana l'chol hadeyas. So we're talking about the rabbonins here. Even the rishis, according to the Alter Rebbe and Avnei Nezer, are mutter b'shinui for chol l'shem b'sakana. I believe sleep apnea can rise to that level, can function normally without this machine, and it could even lead to significant potential danger in some cases. So therefore, if the new machine is better medically than the old machine, I would say it's permissible, but when you put it over your face, you try to do it with some kind of machinery. I wish everybody a Chag Kosher v'Sameach.
Rebbe, thank you very much. We wish you and all the Rabbanim a Chag Kosher, and Bezrat Hashem, we hope to get together after Yom Tov. Thank you very much.
Call to us.
Take care.